With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello! Welcome to BSP Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast, and we are proud members of the Podmoth Network.
Yay! So pride and proud there have different, multiple meanings. Derp. I had like a sweet little sentiment and then it got ruined.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, this is a full episode.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be a good one. So every other week, we're going to bring you a full paranormal topic. Mm-hmm. We have lots of stories, information. And then I'm excited for believer skeptic portion of this where we debunk or say why we believe and Chris burps.
I didn't burp.
Because I wasn't sure if there was going to be any unique debunks considering the topic, but I found
Some
good stuff.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. So first of all, I'll just say it now. So if you're wondering about the whole Podmoth
thing that I just said. And then you might have heard a little sound effect at the beginning that sounded different.
Yeah, we are now part of a network called the Podmoth Network, which promotes a small group of weird, spooky, and just plain odd podcasts. So you can find them on Twitter or Instagram, or just look up Podmoth Network or go to podmoth.network for more information.
Yeah, we are super excited about that. And you're going to be hearing some, maybe some ads or commercials in our episodes
from
for
our
some of them.
Partners in the network.
And they're very nice. Go check them out.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. So back to our show. Topic this week is going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've seen, like, we were talking about our top episodes of last year, and this kind of came about as a result, like a loose result, because we saw that folklore from different areas people seem to enjoy that.
Yeah.
And there was a meme that I posted that was about, in Japanese culture, if you can't fall asleep, then that, like, according to folklore, you're gay.
Yeah. and that's what kind of spawned this episode. So if you didn't know, we are talking about Japanese folklore, basically.
And there is So much.
We didn't even scratch the surface. Like, it's ridiculous.
Nope. Like, we actually kind of stuck to one just subtopic of folklore. So that's why we could branch out and do multiple episodes
from
Japan. And I think we plan to, because this is some wacky shit. And it's fun.
It's so crazy. Yeah. So with that, drinks?
I don't want to.
Because you're telling me at dinner that you're embarrassed you messed up.
I had a mishap. Let me just go ahead and go. Out of the way. Okay, so you actually nailed what I was trying to get. So I went to Fry's. I actually was doing this for real because I was going to get a plum wine. Because I love plum wine. It's sweet and delicious. Well, when I got to the self-checkout.
Prune juice?
I'm walking through the thing. Oh, actually, this is fine. But plum wine has a weird shaped bottle, and it's pinkish. And so I get to the register. I'm like, yes. And I scan it. and it's a raspberry sparkle teeny. And so,
you just picked up the wrong bottle.
I picked up the wrong bottle, and I didn't realize it. And by that point, I was like, I don't want to like
go back,
return this, and then go back. So I was like, you know what? We can just say plum wine in the show notes. And so luckily, I like this. Wine. Yes. Oh god, this thing is going to explode when I open it.
Yeah. And for me, I got a few things. First, for my drink, I got Ramune, which is a soda from Japan. And you open it very weirdly, so I'm going to figure that out. It's one of those drinks where it has the marble in it. So,
okay, so you've never had one of these before?
No.
Because I actually have.
All right. Oh! I dropped the tab.
Oh my god, this is going to be so fun. And just push. Push. Yes! Good job.
Oh, that was easy. I've never tasted it either, so let's see. Mm. It's like Sprite, but lighter. Mm. And with that, since I was getting Japanese stuff and I was at the store and they had some, I brought some Pocky sticks.
Pocky.
I have strawberry, and then I have almond crush, and then I also got us some matcha mochi.
Oh, cool. Oh, I want to try matcha. I've never had it.
What the hell is this? I thought it was going to be like a cookie. I don't want this whole thing. It's like a mushy. It's like a mushy piece of crap. Oh, God. Oh, God.
It's just gelatinous.
Oh. Oh, yuck.
I thought it was going to be different as well. So, all right. So, folklore and mythology in Japan is thousands of years old and is highly influenced by the country's two major religions, Shintoism, which is indigenous to Japan, and Buddhism, which originated in India, making its way to Japan.
Interesting.
Yeah. Shintoism, a little more so, is the influence, since it is a religion that includes a number of magical creatures and spirits, as well as having a number of gods and spirits that are believed to be found in animals, the earth, and other objects. Japanese folklore and mythology are similar in that they both have a number of deities and spirits and are set in both real places in Japan as well as legendary places like the heavens and underworld and so on. A majority of the stories you'll find in Japanese folklore are creation myths, such as the creation of Japanese islands and the lives of the deities, humans, animal spirits, and magical creatures. Folklore of Japan traditionally falls under a number of categories, such as Mukashi Banashi, tales of long ago, Namidabashi, sad stories, Obake Banashi, ghost stories, Ange Ishi Banashi, repaying kindness stories, Warabanashi, funny stories, and Yoki Barbanashi, which are greed stories.
I get a feeling that Banashi means stories.
Yeah. And yeah, so excuse our pronunciations. I'll say that now because there's a lot of Japanese throughout this, and we are definitely not well-versed in Japanese.
No. Oh, God. I'm going to butcher some shit tonight. Yeah.
And, of course, there are a number of supernatural stories, some which we will discuss today, that discuss creatures such as yokai, monster spirits, which I'll get into more later, tengu, which are heavenly dogs, and yurie, which are ghosts, just to name a few.
Oh, I was like, urinary?
Yurie.
Yurie.
Along with the country's religions, a lot of historical texts is also a basis for Japanese folklore and mythology. For many, many years, like most cultures, a lot of these stories were passed down through oral tradition. Storytellers would travel from village to village telling their stories along with providing illustrations of the stories.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
Yeah. One of these historical texts was completed in 812 Common Era.
812.
Yeah. Called the Kojiki, Records of Ancient Matters. The Kojiki contains stories of the world's creation, the origin of the gods, and Japanese emperor ancestry. Just for an example, according to the Kojiki, in the beginning, heaven and earth were formed from a primeval ooze. Life then emerged from the earth, while in the heavens, three deities appeared, followed by two others, which became the separate heavenly deities. After them came the seven generations of the ages of the gods, two singular deities, and then came from a substance floating in the ooze, and five male and female coupled deities.
Wow.
In addition to Kojiki, there was also Nihongi or Nihonsoki, Chronicle of Japan, that was completed in 720 Common Era, that in addition to myths and legends also is attributed to helping establish the genealogy of the imperial family.
Well, I did not hear any mention of Venus alien creating all of them.
What?
El Conter from the minisode?
Yeah.
Happy Science. He created all of this shit.
Yeah.
I keep thinking like at least the ooze creating thing, it just sounds to me like a metaphor for semen.
Could be, yeah.
So, like, and they're two just
proper to talk about it, so yeah. It's the ooze.
One thing that I learned, which I thought is cool, is that in Japanese culture, everything in nature has a kami, which is a deity or spirit, which has resulted in a huge pantheon in which some claim there are millions of different kamis. So,
wow.
Millions of gods.
Not communists.
No.
K-A-M-I. Not millions of kamis.
Kami. K-A-M-I.
Nice.
In regards to deities, the two most important are Izanagi and his sister Izanami, who are said to have created the islands of Japan and many of the gods and goddesses. In addition to all the major deities and spirits, there are also a number of minor deities called Tengu. Tengu are mischievous deities that are said to be part human and part bird that live in trees of the mountainous areas and often play tricks on humans but don't like to be tricked themselves. One of the creatures that came from the Buddhist tradition is that of the Oni, which is said to be a more threatening group of spirits. They are portrayed as large horned demons that can transform into either both humans or animals. And you've probably seen the masks. You see those often, yeah. The Oni can be invisible, can steal human souls, and are often associated with bad things such as death and disease. Japanese folklore mythology is quite important to the Japanese culture, which can be seen in how it's represented in art, drama, literature, and so on. Speaking of literature, Japan has quite an extensive literary history and has been even credited in creating the first novel called The Tale of Genji.
The first novel ever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is not only important for being the first novel, but because it was written by a Japanese noble woman in the 11th century.
No, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yay.
I can't talk about Japanese folklore mythology without mentioning the town of Tono, which has been called Japanese City of Folklore, due mostly to the 1910 publication of a book called Legends of Tono. The book was written by a folklorist and contained a collection of the ancient spoken word stories. There's so much to cover about Japanese folklore mythology that I have only scratched the surface, like I said. So,
oh my God.
If you're interested, I would definitely suggest diving in because there's a lot to learn.
A lot. Yeah. So now I think we're actually going to change up our stories a little bit because it turns out Chris mentioned very briefly yokai, and it turns out all four of our stories have to do with different yokai. He gets into that a little bit in his first story. So he's going to go first so that we'll have an idea of the type of spirit or lore that we're going to be talking about through this episode. Yeah. We didn't even realize it until we shared what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, this could have just been an episode on just yokai. Mm-hmm. And then we could have branched out from there. But of course, we had no idea.
Yeah.
He's wetting his palate with ball juice.
Anyways, so you get more of me now. So my first story, I'm going to talk about a spirit that seems pretty harmless, but can be pretty frightening depending on the situation.
Oh, is this the funny one?
They're both pretty funny.
Okay, yay.
I'm talking about the Makura Gayashi.
That sounded so good how you pronounce that. Makura Gayashi.
A Makura Gayashi is a type of yokai, which are Japanese supernatural monsters, ghosts, demons, or spirits. They kind of encompass all of that, you know. And stories about them are thousands of years old, just like what I mentioned earlier, and in more modern times have been categorized. There are yokai based on their true form, yokai based on their mutation, yokai based on their outward appearance, and many other categories. Both my stories are about creatures that are considered yokai. So back to the Makura Gayashi. The word itself apparently translates to pillow flipper. And you'll very soon learn why.
That sounds dirty.
So named because they are said to come at night and move your pillow from your head to your feet while you sleep.
Those bastards.
Or in some stories, move the person around so they end up with their head at the foot of the bed.
Okay, so what I've learned from a lot of these, and my stories included, especially one of them, is some of, you know, usually in other folklore,
it seems very trivial.
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird, like, oh, they come and they tousle your hair. Like, it's like almost, it's almost like an explanation for anything weird that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. Is a yokai.
Yeah. So as if being flipped around isn't weird enough, what makes it scary to a lot of Japanese folk is that when somebody dies, their body is traditionally laid out facing north. So to wake up with your head facing north in Japan can be quite unsettling.
Oh, you know? So that's like a little mischievous prank.
Yeah.
Wait, so that means when anytime everybody goes to bed, nobody sleeps facing north?
In what I've read, I don't know. I didn't do a complete research on that, but from what I read traditionally.
Wow. Yeah. So if you look at an apartment, the realtor would be like, and you'll notice that none of these rooms have a headboard that's going to face north.
Yeah.
And the renters are like, oh, yay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
In other instances, the ghost will move the mat that people are sleeping on, you know, like the Japanese sleeping mats.
Mm-hmm.
They have also been known to sit on a person's chest while they sleep, squeezing the air out of them.
Oh, that's like a shadow person.
I would say, sleep paralysis, basically. Yeah. It is said that the Makura Gayashi will sometimes run through ashes and leave dirty footprints. In some versions of the legend, it is said that anyone who sees a Makura Gayashi will lose consciousness, and while they are passed out, the ghost will steal their soul, killing them.
Oh, well, that took a turn.
Yeah, it also said that if someone sees a Makura Gayashi, they will die. It is said that they appear as childlike ghosts who are often seen dressed as monks, samurais, or other Japanese characters. They are said only to haunt specific rooms of a house. It is believed that people, more so children, again, who died in the specific room becomes the room's Makura Gayashi.
Oh, I was about to say, how do they know which room it is?
Yeah.
So if a child dies in a room,
they become
that's
one.
Where...
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's icky.
Yeah. Often these spirits are a result of a tragic or violent death, such as murder. For example, there are stories about rich travelers who rent a room and then are killed by the renter for their money, which then resulted in the other renters having their pillows moved at night by that ghost.
I love that, like, you murdered me. Prepare to have your pillow moved. I love that you're like choking and you're still eating.
Regarding the more malevolent version of the creatures, in one story it said that the Makura Gayashi appeared as a beautiful woman, and then a servant encounters that woman and is mocked by the spirit, only to die from fright by seeing it.
Wow.
In another story, there are 7 woodcutters who are cutting a large tree. At the end of the day, they lay down to sleep, and a tree spirit appears who flips their pillows. And the next day, none of the 7 men wake up, having died.
Oh, damn.
So the activities of the Makura Gayashi seem pretty trivial, like I said, but are actually tied to ancient folklore and black magic. It was once believed that dreaming was an act close to death, and that the soul actually leaves the body while dreaming, traveling on Earth or through other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, it is also believed that in sleep, the soul is unable to return to the body if the body is moved.
Moved, yes.
Or the pillow is flipped during sleep.
Oh.
So because of this, the soul is unable to find its way back to the body, resulting in the person's death. So it was because of these superstitions and beliefs that the Makura Gayashi originated, with pillow flipping being feared as a way that the body could be disconnected from its soul.
Wow.
So next time you have a fit of sleep paralysis or wake up with your pillow at your feet, remember the Makura Gayashi and hold on to your soul.
Hold on to your soul. I feel like if you're there, what a fun like a prank to play on your siblings.
Oh, my gosh. Because
all you have to do is run into their room in the middle of the night and just move their pillow, and they're going to freak the fuck out.
Yeah, no.
Wow, interesting. Well, that sounds right in line with my first story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be talking about Tsukumagami. Did it. Or Japan's household spirits. And not alcohol.
Yes.
just to clarify. All right. Imagine going to boil some water.
Okay.
But your kettle transforms into a raccoon and runs away.
What?
Or imagine this, turning a light on to find your paper lampshade grinning at you and wagging a long tongue.
Ew.
You might have a spirit problem.
Yeah.
But these are no ordinary spirits. Meet the Tsukumagami.
Interesting.
So a Tsukumagami is literally an object that comes to life after existing for 100 years. And by object, I mean the most mundane shit just lying around your house. And I'll get into a few of them here in a little bit.
Like a pencil?
Yep. Exactly. So it sounds ridiculous, but once I explain it, it kind of makes sense. And a lot of this is really about the Japanese viewing virtually everything around them with a healthy dose of superstition and respect. Because as you said, like, monsters and spirits can dwell really anywhere.
Yes.
And absolutely. That's kind of where this comes from. Now, the most accepted definition of the term says that Tsukumagami are inanimate objects that once they have served their owner for 100 years, they receive a soul and therefore become alive and self-aware. After a while, the object can actually gain humanoid-like characteristics from having that spirit attached. tears in like a sheet mm-hmm. can become eye holes.
So they're like ghosts, like they put a sheet over their head.
And then it becomes an eye hole. Or it can literally be, if you have a tear in a pencil, like in a gash in the wood, that can become an eyeball. Or if it's round, it can become a mouth full of teeth.
Ooh, that's creepy.
Some objects will manifest faces and appendages depending on how they wish to look. And sometimes they might have like one arm or one leg or two.
Or a big old penis.
Or I want to be a Tsukumagami. And this is really depending on if they want to be seen as threatening or friendly.
So they choose to be seen?
Yeah, they'll choose, and they choose their appearance based on how they want to be viewed. So it's actually kind of interesting.
So if they want to be sexy, then I'm a sexy pencil.
They have like these DSLs, and they're like, ooh, look how hot I am. And whenever I thought of a mouthful of teeth, I'm thinking of vagina dentata.
Ew, gross.
Yeah. So the Tsukumagami are typically harmless, and at most tended to just play occasional pranks. However, whenever these items become discarded, damaged, or mistreated, so, mm-hmm. you know, you have that pencil that, you know, just throwing or chewing on it, you know, even if it's, I feel like it's inadvertent, the spirits can become resentful, angry, vengeful, or sad. At this point, they have the capacity for anger and would band together to take revenge upon those who were wasteful or threw them away thoughtlessly. So they wander the streets at night to meet others of their kind.
This is like evil Toy Story.
I literally, the next sentence of my notes is, doesn't this give Toy Story a whole new meaning?
Or did you ever watch those horror movies from the 90s? Puppet Master?
Oh, Puppet Master.
There's a whole series? That's like what it is.
Oh, yeah, except I had never seen it. Oh. Well, remember Brave Little Toaster? That old cartoon? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking of. And now, like, I feel like I already have a weird thing where if I see a stuffed animal that's old that's been laying there for a while.
Like the Velveteen Rabbit?
Yeah, I feel sorry for it. Because I'm like, well, now when it comes to life, it's sad. But now if I see just like a pencil that, since you said that, lying around, I'm going to be like, oh,
you're
shit.
Like, don't chew on that.
It's coming to you're going to get it. And speaking of that, that actually ties perfectly. Some people are actually so scared of Tsukumagamis, they actually throw out old objects before they become 100 years old. By doing this, they prevent the objects from becoming Tsukumagami and getting them.
Oh, my God.
So can you imagine that? Like, you have, like, an antique, and you're like, well, I can't keep this shit. Like, you're throwing out all your valuables because you're so scared that it's going to come to life.
So do people put, like, a date on all their stuff?
Oh, that's a good question. Because people, there's also people who refuse to buy secondhand items because if they don't know, or they don't know how their previous owners treated it. And if the previous owner was unkind, the Tsukumagami can take it out on them.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I never thought about having dates on everything. That's wild.
Yeah.
So the question then is, how can you stop one of these once it's all up in your business? Well, one, you can actually perform what's called a jinja ceremony to console the broken and unstable items or unusable. And I think that's kind of like, can you imagine, like, you take your shoe and you're like, poor shoe, like, you're okay. Like, all people just walking around with their random objects.
Yeah.
The second method is, this is interesting. Once an object has become a Tsukumagami, the spirit can no longer leave the object. And once they're possessed, they take on the qualities of whatever they've integrated with, allowing them to become damaged by normal means. So if they take up that pencil, you can karate chop. Like, you know how you used to play with pencils like that and break them? Mm-hmm. You can just do that, you know? And they're also repulsed by electricity. Mm-hmm. So that's something that can be done as well. So with all that said then, there are a few common items that typically have been known to become Tsukumagami. Mm-hmm. One are sandals. Traditional Japanese sandals are a type of flip-flop made from rice straw. If they are old and mistreated, they are likely to grow arms, legs, and one eye, transform, and create a bunch of mischief.
Weird.
There's another one. There's tons, but this one is ridiculous, called a porcupine-possessed cheese grater. And this is just a regular cheese grater, but apparently when it becomes dull and can no longer be used and, I guess, passes the 100-year mark, its slicers transform into spines, and it grows legs and becomes a porcupine. And then the big one. This is insane. Oddly enough, there is one inanimate object that animates so often that it has its own term and its own category, and it's called a kasa obaki, and that is an umbrella. Right? I was like, what? Yeah. So a kasa obaki is the name of an animated parasol. Mm-hmm. It's an older broken umbrella that turned into a monster, usually with one eye, one leg, and a long tongue, though other variations have been reported. Unlike many yokai, this one is relatively harmless and enjoys scaring people for fun, sometimes licking them with its long tongue, which it says, though disgusting, is not dangerous.
Weird.
Yeah. Other stories have told of an umbrella that would appear in valleys on rainy nights, and those who would see it would cower and not be able to move their feet. And other variations of that, it can actually cause a gust of wind that will blow people up into the sky and they'll never be seen again.
Okay, Mary Poppins.
That's exactly like, so Mary Poppins just was holding on to a Casa Obaki. And she's like, give me the fuck down. So this might sound like kind of obscure.
Very.
Right? Nope. These are fucking everywhere. In Japan, there are toys, video games, fan art, all dedicated to it. In fact, one of the big monsters that appeared in an episode of Power Rangers, and you can find it and have a picture, was a Casa Obaki.
Oh, that's crazy. Yep.
And that is a story of, what is it, Suku Magami.
That is weird and insane.
Yeah, I was like, this is so crazy.
I wonder where that like originated.
I don't know, but I get this feeling like the scary thing about this is you're not safe anywhere. Anything can become a spirit. So even if you're just holed up in your closet, the little string that you pull to turn on the light could like grow teeth and like bite your finger.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Today, we bask in the light of mustachioed greatness. Hi, this is Daniel Segura, host of the Mustachioed Podcastio. You like mustaches? You like movies? You like sexy chinganos? Well, the Podcastio is the place for you. We are talking legendary mustaches from Charles Bronson to the great Burt Reynolds to the OG Ice-T. Find the Mustachioed Podcastio anywhere you listen to podcasts. That is Mustachioed Podcastio.
For my second story, I'm talking about a legendary water creature called the Kappa, which is also considered a yokai. Mm-hmm. I found tons of information on this, so I've condensed it as best I could. The Kappa, sometimes known as Kawapa, Gawapa, and Kawaso, is a water monster or water sprite, also sometimes referred to as a water imp, that supposedly inhabits many of the bodies of water in Japan. Kappa is roughly translated to water child. The Kappa is said to have magical powers that can be used for both good and evil, using these powers to play tricks or lash out violently on humans. So there's your good
is
and
that
evil.
Same? Yep, exactly.
Kappas have been known to play tricks such as making loud farting noises or looking up a woman's kimono, but have also gone as far as kidnapping and eating children, sexually assaulting women, or attacking someone that comes too close to the edge of the water and sucking their entrails out through their anus.
Wait, okay, hold on. Well, first, do you think eating a child gives you gas? Because that could explain the horrific farts.
Yeah,
eat the entrails through their anus?
Yep.
So they like squat over it and they're like...
Yep. And I will get more to that in a little bit. Yeah.
You know that that Trey Parker, who made South Park, lived in
Japan
for a long time. He's fluent. And he has an episode of South Park where people eat through their ass.
Oh,
I wonder. A Terra retrogestion.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I wonder if you base it on that.
Yeah. The Kappa's appearance can vary from place to place, but all descriptions have similar bits. They are typically said to be about the size of a young child, no more than about 5 feet tall, and look like a cross between a turtle, monkey, and a lizard. So imagine that, if you will.
Speaking of a Power Ranger villain.
They have webbed hands and feet and are said to be amazing swimmers. Of course, if they live in the water.
Yeah, so. Water child.
They have a shell on their back and a beak-like mouth that, depending on the story, has sharp shark-like teeth. They are said to have scaly skin that appears to be yellow, green, and or blue, and sometimes can be seen having long, shaggy bowl cut hair. Haircut. Yeah, it's really weird. Most prominent is the small bowl-like dent on the top of their heads that is said to hold a small pool of water called the Sara, which is said to be the source of their magical powers.
Oh.
It is said if a Kappa comes on land, they have to keep the liquid full in the Sara, or their powers will fail and they can even die.
So they have a way to fight it.
Yeah. Although they sound pretty evil, they are not always terrible. It is said that they are talented in medicine, especially as it relates to bone setting. Additionally, they will often be merciful to travelers who have hurt themselves or become ill by nursing them back to health.
Like, physically? Like, actually? breastfeeding?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. They're weird enough so. Where I kind of believe it.
Yeah.
Anal nursing.
Kappas are said to have an obsession with something called Shirikodama. You're going to love this. The Shirikodama is said to be a mysterious jewel that some believe contains a person's life force, which is located in a human's anus.
Oh, okay.
As such, it is believed that a lot of human attacks by the kappa are done in order to obtain their anal jewel. Yes. Huh.
I wonder if I'm a kappa.
Oh my god. Anyways.
Why? So, how do... Like, you try to think of like, oh, I can see how they invented this story because of explaining this or a cautionary tale for this. Where the hell did all this shit come from?
I don't know. And so aside from bodies of water, many stories will tell of kappa emerging from toilets because of the anus.
And you're just sitting there. So it's right there, right in its face.
It reminds me of Ghoulies. That movie scared me as a kid. Yeah. Scared the shit out of me.
Literally.
It is said that kappa are obsessed with politeness and human tradition, which can often be used against it. For example, it is said if you encounter a kappa, you should bow deeply, which they respectfully do in return, which will then spill out the water in its sara.
Wow.
Yeah. If this does not work, it is said you can sneak up on a kappa and remove their arms, which are easily detached. Once you have their arm or whatever, they will promise you anything for the return of their appendages.
Huh.
One other way to defend oneself from the kappa is with, strangely enough, cucumber. Apparently, kappa are also obsessed with them, and in some stories, it was said that people would carry cucumber with them in order to bribe the kappa should they encounter one.
And you know what a cucumber looks like. You're thinking of the anal jewels and retrieving it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of maybe repressed homosexuality
or just sex.
Yeah.
As insane as this creature sounds, there have been a number of sightings throughout the years. In 1970, two police officers encountered a hunched over form on the side of the country road. At first, they believed it was a small child and stopped to ensure its safety. When they got close, the creature got up, which made them realize that it was no child, but instead it was something that was, they said, looked like a cross between a monkey and a frog.
I can honestly say that of all the stories we told, this would be the least likely to believe that there would be a sighting of it, and there is one. That's wild. And it was actual police.
Yeah, they said the creature was chattering in a high-pitched voice and then suddenly took off across the road into the brush. What made this story significant is that the creature was seen, it wasn't seen near the water. This was on the side of the road, like away from the water. So take that with the greatest out of fuel.
I believe it.
The kappa is said to have been encountered in many bodies of water, but in many of the bodies of water of Tono, which I spoke about in history, which is also said to be the birthplace of the creature. There in Tono, you can find the kappa pool, which is said to be crawling with them. That being said, there's still belief in the kappa. In fact, today you can still find signs hanging near certain bodies of water warning people not to enter the water for fear of the kappa.
Wow.
And there you have the reptilian bowl cut anal-eating yokai. You're welcome.
Oh, my God. I mean, is it... I was waiting for you to say that it can only typically goes after men. And then I would say, well, then the jewel is your prostate. And that makes perfect sense. Like, they go after your prostate with their magic cucumber. And then that explains the entire story.
I read somewhere, and only in passing because I didn't do research on that part, but something that jewel is somehow connected to your liver and they're attracted to your liver or something like that. Huh. But I can't be 100% sure on that part.
I'm imagining some porn scenarios that have to do with this, but
hentai.
I digress. Some hentai. So my next story, I'm going to be talking to everyone about the Haikigani.
Okay.
And this is a shorter story, but I think it's really interesting because it actually has a basis in real history, and it also is a real thing. It's a real creature.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is yet, I can't say if it is or isn't.
The end. And it has anal sapphires and...
anal sapphires.
Magic cucumbers. So the Haikigani are actually crabs that are... it's a species of arthropod native to Japan.
Okay.
And it's a real thing. I've seen pictures. We're going to post them. Dear Loud.
Like STD crabs?
You have to have a microscope to look at them. just like STD crabs, these things are creepy. They literally look like they have human faces on their bodies. And it's, yes, when viewed from above, they appear to have the scowling face of a samurai mask imprinted on their carapace. And I've seen pictures.
Their carapace?
Yeah, and that's exactly what is on their body. It's exactly what it looks like. And you can see a picture, and it literally looks like those old samurai masks, identical to it. And that's why they're on this list. And there's a belief around them that has an origin story, and this is based in real history, and then it veers off a little bit, but it's really interesting.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like listening intently.
It's really wild. So during the 12th century, a bloody civil war was fought between Japan's two most important political clans, the mm-hmm. Minamoto, or the Genji, mm-hmm. and the Taira, or the Heike.
Yeah.
The war was decisively ended in 1185 at the Battle of Dan no Ura. The Genji and Heike fleets met at a narrow strait. God, straight. While the battle initially favored the Heike, as the tides changed, the advantage went to the Genji. On top of that, a Taira or Heike general defected and revealed the location of their ships carrying the six-year-old Emperor Ontoku and the Imperial Regalia. Mm-hmm. So at that point, Genji archers rained down arrows upon the Heike fleet. When it became clear that the defeat was inevitable, the surviving Heike flung themselves into the sea to drown rather than to be captured.
Yeah.
Additionally, a member of the royal household took the six-year-old Emperor Ontoku, plunged him in the water, and drowned him as well,
no way.
Rather than allowing him to be captured by the opposing forces.
Shit.
His mother and grandmother followed him in their grief, so they killed themselves. So was that form of, and this is all true. The battle resulted in a decisive victory for the Genji and the complete destruction of the Heike. This crucial battle was actually a cultural and political turning point in Japanese history. It says that a guy, Yoritomo, became the first shogun or military ruler of Japan, mm-hmm. and it marked the beginning of 7 centuries during which Japan was ruled by warriors and shoguns instead of emperors and aristocrats, which I thought was really cool.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Now, so although these Heike were physically exterminated, their souls lived on, carrying the grudge of the war and the betrayal of their general. The souls of the dead warriors, so basically whenever they drowned themselves and they were lost at sea, they became lodged in the crabs crawling on the bottom of the sea. The crabs' shells mutated into the shape of a scowling face, which became a permanent reminder of the never-ending grudge of the Heike.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, to this day, it is said that the Heikegane crabs roam the depths of the ocean around Japan, searching for the lost heirlooms of their empire. And also, the Japanese then never eat ones they find that have these faces on them.
Yeah.
It is considered unlucky to eat these plentiful Heikegane from the region, mm-hmm. for to do so is to invite the sin of familial betrayal into one's heart.
Well, Japanese culture is big on ancestry and things of that nature too. So maybe that was also like, that could be one of our ancestors, against our ancestors, either way.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. It could be for or against an enemy or a friend, and you don't want to eat that. And what's really interesting is that this idea of not eating them actually plays into my debunk, which I thought was really cool. So now we get into it. So should I go ahead and debunk, or do you want to do believer first? Since we're flipping things up, do you want to believer?
Sure. I'll believer first.
Believer first. Tell me how you believe in anal sucking creatures.
That's another conversation for another day, but okay. Anyways, of both my stories, I would have to say there is a bit of truth to both of them.
Say what?
Both creatures originated in stories that are thousands of years old, as I've said a couple of times, and like any good folktale, have been passed on for generations. In my research, I found a paper about reality in Japanese folktales, and the author says, quote, "Tales tied up with certain localities are told because people believe them. Folktales are narrative art in the true sense of the word. And their world can be an expression of creed, as are works of high art." You see, with the Kappa and the Makurigayashi, these stories were created in order to have a viable explanation for things that scared people and to them was otherwise unexplainable. I completely agree with the often said adage, we fear what we don't know. So a lot of these stories were created in order to lessen people's fear. Like with the Kappa, for example, since this story is thousands of years old, perhaps at one time there was really a water creature that could hurt and kill people that eventually became extinct, leaving stories behind that once real now seems the stuff of legends. Although where the whole butthole jewel idea comes from, I don't have an idea. Inquiring minds really want to know.
Yeah, we do.
As for Makura Gayeshi, I think I explained it well in my story as it relates to people's superstitions, beliefs surrounding death and the soul. Japan has a long history that we only know a little about, and as all good stories go, like a game of telephone, much is often lost in translation. No matter what you believe, it's fun, and in some cases scary, to believe that many of the creatures in Japanese culture exist. To quote a couple of folklorists, quote, Japan possesses more legends than any other country in the world. The legend is therefore a true story in the minds of the folk who retain it in their memory and pass it on to the next generation. So here's to passing on these amazing stories and surviving the world for generations to come.
Nice. Wow. Okay, that actually makes a lot more sense. Whenever you first said, I kind of believe in these, I was like, what is happening? Well, so for Debunk, I actually found a really little interesting, tiny little tidbit about the, I actually forgot their name already, and I scrolled down, the Tsukumagami. So it says here that what I found, and I really like this, was though there may be some who actually believe in this animated umbrella, it's mostly thought of as a metaphor used to explain how objects gain character and personality as they age. So if you think about like an old desk or an old lamp or something over 100 years, it almost feels like it's alive because it has so much history and there's so much story around it.
That totally makes sense. Or just think of like, even say your favorite shirt and you think like, oh, I remember where I got this. Yeah. Or like it has this history behind it.
And you even see it and you even get a physical attachment to it. And yeah. It almost feels partially alive.
Yeah, that
and
makes sense.
So that's kind of a basis behind it. I thought it was actually really sweet. And I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Now for the Hakigami crab, I actually found two different theories. And they're both equally interesting. And we can see which one you like. Famous American astronomer and author Carl Sagan speculated that the proliferation of crabs that look like samurai were due to artificial selection. And in case you don't know, artificial selection is the process by which humans use animal breeding and plant breeding to selectively develop particular traits.
Yeah.
And so it's like we're interfering kind of in evolution. Well, in this case, Sagan said that's what happened, but it was unintentional. So he said that not all of these crabs have faces, like, you know, it would just kind of come and go. But remember what I said before about the Japanese's refusal to eat crabs with the samurai faces on them?
Yeah.
Well, Sagan proposed that the fishermen fishing Japan's waters would throw back any crabs whose shells looked like the samurai face out of respect for the fallen Haiki tribe.
Yeah.
This preserved the DNA of the Haikigani with samurai-like faces while thinning out the genetic lines of those without.
Yeah.
That's why today, virtually all of them have samurai faces.
Oh, that is cool.
I thought that was really interesting. Now, there's actually some debate about this, which brings about theory number two. One expert in the field, Joel Martin, got into the science of why their bodies look like faces. Mm-hmm. He said the folds and creases that resemble a snarling samurai face are actually the points where muscles attach to the carapace. They just happen to look like the face of an angry samurai thanks to our innate ability to find faces in random objects, a phenomenon called pareidolia. So he said that they have samurai faces because of their genetic makeup, and Sagan says that it's because we basically weeded out all the ones that didn't. So which is it? I think it's probably the second version. I feel like they probably all have that, as it's actually kind of a physical makeup of them.
Yeah.
But whichever you believe, I find it really interesting. And then finally, I also do want to point out that crabs of all different species with human-like shells have been found throughout the entire world.
That's cool.
Yeah, thanks. There we go. That was that was a thing this episode. That was
told
great.
You it's outrageous.
I love it. I love it.
So creep of the week. This week we have a short but sweet email story from listener Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you.
She says, I don't know if y'all are still doing this. I'm only on the 2019 episodes, but I figured I would send anyways.
Yay.
When I was probably in 9th or 10th grade, my best friend and I had a Ouija board that we busted out from time to time because we were psychologically healthy little girls. So we played one night and got the response saying we were talking to Jimmy Hoofa, how we thought it was pronounced, and had no idea who that was supposed to be. Creepy, but whatever, we went to sleep. In the morning, we woke up in her unfinished basement where we had crashed. There was an insulation sealed with styrofoam and plastic along the walls, and stabbed into with a pencil was the name Jimmy Hoffa. We went on Google and immediately freaked out and went to yell at her little sister for spying on and screwing with us. She had just returned from a sleepover, and we never got an answer as to how it happened.
Well, I literally, whenever you were in the middle of that, I was like, if Jimmy Hoffa's body is like buried in the insulation in their unfinished basement, I'm going to lose my shit. Wait, so there's no confirmation if she did it or not.
Yeah.
No. Ooh, can you ask her and just see, like now, like if she remembers?
Well, she listens to us, so eventually she'll hear this.
Yeah, whenever you...
when you catch up to your episodes,
whenever you make it to this episode.
Can you tell us? Yeah.
We need information. Well, everyone, wow, thanks for listening to that one.
Fucking wild ride.
Yeah, we're definitely going to dive back into this because what?
Yeah, just insane.
So. Yeah, it was great. It was great. Fun, and also there's some nice stuff in history, and it's just fascinating.
Yeah, Japanese culture is absolutely fascinating and beautiful.
So. It is. It's kind of a nice, because I remember before we talked about like the suicide forest in Japan, and it was so tragic that at least it's a little bit, a nice change to get into something that's a little sillier.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, with that, guys, thank you, or guys, gals, and binary pals.
nice. Did you just make that up?
I've heard it somewhere.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks for listening to us, and we greatly appreciate it. And to show your appreciation, if you would just, you know, whatchamacallit, I was going to say promote us, but...
Tell a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Refer us to other people.
Yeah. Give us a little support would be lovely.
And come find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at BSPodPHX. Join our private Facebook group, which is ridiculous and fun.
So fun.
And if you have any stories like another creep of the week, that would be great. You can contact us at BSPodPHX@gmail.com.
Yeah. And my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, as always, are available. This is going to be released after the drawing. So congratulations to winner A, B, C, D, and E. We don't know who you are yet because we haven't done the drawing yet now. But if you won, yay.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Okay. I think that is going to silly us off for now. So everyone have a wonderful time and bye.
See you again next time.